weren't we just talking about cold weather and cold water and being able to fish in these conditions and winter patterns and fall patterns and all that? Well, it changes overnight, just like they say pretty much everywhere. Wait 5 minutes and the weather will change. That seems to be especially true along the Gulf Coast. We got Indian summer bearing down on us, and our guy Caleb McCumber is a Gen Xer, or he's an early Gen Xer, and asked me before we started recording today, what exactly is an Indian summer? So I know we have some young listeners. Indian summer means it's especially unseasonably warm when it should be cold. So that was a question that we had regarding what happens now. I mean, we were talking about dumps and cooler water. We're going to be in the 70s, even pushing 80 degrees in some areas of our listenership, you know, up and down the Gulf Coast here. So we're going to talk about Indian summer. This is the Bite Me podcast. We got a lot of other topics on the way. I am John Lopez. That is Captain Scott Knoll. Looking good. Scott, looks like you got a haircut. And Captain Caleb McCumber, sporting his Grundon's gear. I can tell what he likes to use. We are the podcast. So just go to the Bite Me group page on Facebook, and you're good to go. Just become a member. We'll let you in. Somebody will. And then you can subscribe as well, and you get notifications on these podcasts as they happen, as they drop. You can be one of the first ones to listen to it and be smarter than your other guys on the boat. All right, boys. Lots of topics to get to. Cold water kayaking. We're going to answer some lithium battery questions that we had that we addressed last week. We're going to go to the source and get some actual technical information on those. Fly fishing. We haven't hit that in a long time. I had a really good question on fly fishing, really good question on corkies, and a lot more. But let's get right into it. Scott, you know what an Indian summer is. You're about my age. Let's start with you. And man, this weather, I'm going to be taking a day off at the end of the week, so I'm going to really grind. Let's talk about what changes, if anything, we need to make as the weather's going to be warm and has been warm for an extended period of time.
Looks like tides are up all up and down the coast. It's going to be southeast winds through the whole week. So there's no big winter low tides going to happen. All the temperatures, I mean, the upper coast, the lowest it gets is in the high 50s. And all the way down, you know, down the coast, it's in the 80s in the afternoon. So, yeah, it's September.
Yeah.
It's not December. It's September. I'd fish it, you know, fish it like you would an early fall pattern. Got a little bit higher tides. Shrimp's going to be back up there in the grass. Whatever didn't leave during that last little cool spell last week, which, by the way, was colder than they said.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about it being in the 50s. I woke up to 43. It was pretty damn chilly out here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's in the back, in the rearview mirror now. I mean, there's some talk about a real cold front, possibly middle of December, you know, looking at those long range forecasts, but yeah, those are like the hurricane forecasts. It's pretty out there.
It's more of a recommendation than a fact. Let me ask you this, Scott, before we get to Caleb. I know we've had a lot of discussion lately, because of, you know, birds, working, et cetera. Does the warmer weather bait more on the shorelines, et cetera? Does that affect, maybe the birds getting into the mid bay?
I think the shrimp are going to be migrating no matter what. It's, you know, it's more about time of year, you know, length of day, you know, same thing with plants. Everything is based more off of that than it is the actual temperatures. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets all fired up about, you know, the deer rut and needing a cold, big cold front for a deer rut. I see them rutting out here when it's 80 degrees.
Yeah.
It's more about the time of year than it is the actual weather. The weather changes from day to day.
Right, right. Caleb, what are you seeing, man? What, you know, you guys, you've got quite the network on the water. You've been on the water. Warmer weather, anything changing in terms of what's happening other than I know we've had a couple of rough days of fishing?
Yeah, the fishing seemed to have got a little bit rougher. There's probably a little bit of confusion out there. They're trying to get into one pattern and getting pushed back into another, but I don't think it's going to change a whole lot. I think it's just going to have a lot to do with what are the conditions of the day, what's the wind doing as to whether or not it stays in that November pattern. And as far as my early Gen X status, my generation doesn't really think that Indian summer is appropriate in 2021.
Native American summer?
We want to know. I think
we're going
to
get canceled.
Yeah. I think we should just call it a warmer than usual winter.
Warmer than usual winter.
I would feel better about warmer than usual wet winter.
Yeah. Hey, while we're on the topic of Native Americans and Indian summers and such, I'm guessing you had a couple of comments at your birthday party Saturday, which I was very, very sorry I missed. I got the invitation. I was about to hit accept. Your better half did a great job of the surprise. And I realized as I was hitting accept that it was the same day as my son's wedding. So I figured I made the right decision going to my son's wedding over your birthday party, your 40th birthday party. But I'm guessing a few people commented about, you know, how you fish under working turkeys.
Well, you know, the people that commented are working turkeys, but listen, you get me in the fishing mode. If it has wings and flaps, I'm seeing it flying around in circles, the fish under it. It's just that simple. Now, I did spend a lot of time in the deer blind over the weekend, and I came up with so many great comebacks I could have made.
Yeah.
Whenever you were talking about the turkeys, but you know that's here and gone. Yeah, the birthday party was amazing. It was outstanding. Scott was there.
It was quite the group, yeah. Man. A lot of people that are on the, you know, that are friends of the podcast or on the Bite Me group page. I saw some people there that, you know, that were tagged on your pictures that I would have loved to have met.
Oh yeah, no, it was great, and we had Laguna Rods was there, Anglers Anonymous was there, you know, Scott was there. Most of my true friends were there.
Yeah, well, if I was to be a true friend and be there, I wouldn't have a true family. that was the choice to make.
You know what they say about the holidays, don't you, John?
What's that?
It's the time that you leave those you love to go be with your family.
This is true. This is absolutely true. We all have to know those people on the holidays that we'd rather not be around. But we
all right,
we got him. We got the boy good.
How's
he
that?
Had no clue.
Oh,
he had no idea that it was going on. We had his whole shop was full of people.
Yeah.
And he had no idea.
There was easily 60 or seven people there. And there was the influencer girls from Instagram. There was video game streamers. There was professional fishermen. There were guides. There were business owners and my family, of course. And I had no idea it was coming. This thing was 12 layers deep. I found out that the lie started like October 13th while I was at the World Series is how long this has been happening and how nobody. And most of the people I hang out with, we have a beer or two, and nobody slipped for that amount of time. It's either my friends are too good at lying or I'm too bad at picking it up.
Well, if you recall a few weeks ago when it was actually your birthday, I mentioned it on the podcast for that reason, just to say, hey, you know, what'd you do? I hope you had a good birthday, blah, blah, blah. But I already knew, of course, as Scott did as well, that this was happening. I was stunned that you could do that on Facebook, by the way. Just a quick side note before we get into the next thing. She put like an entire Facebook post that we could answer to, comment on. I commented on it. Sorry, you know, my son's wedding, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know you could do that. It was completely anonymous.
So I finally got to see that Facebook thing that she made after the party was over. And it's kind of funny because there's so much stuff that makes sense now. My father-in-law was coming and working in my yard like a madman. Mm-hmm. And I asked the wife, like, what is going on? Oh, he's bored. My father-in-law, he's way too lazy by nature to be that bored.
Okay, but, well, it won't be at your next birthday
so
party.
The top of that group page was one of my pictures of me holding a redfish, right? And when we were at the World Series, Daniel's phone, I walked past it, and I saw that picture on his page, and I picked it up to look at it, and he almost knocked me over and took it from me. I said, why do you have a picture of me on your phone? He said, don't worry about it. Stay out of my phone, and walked off. And it made me mad. Like, we were about to argue about it.
All right, let's get to it here. You know, you mentioned you know, some of the things going on in terms of the warmer weather, and that it won't affect, you know, too much what we're seeing. Caleb, one thing that we wanted to get to last week, and we always have some extra topics, and I wanted to, and I want to do it right now before I forget, is the working birds. I've experienced a little bit of this, but sand trout, man. I mean, I really like sand trout. Part of it is it's kind of a touchstone to my youth when I'd go out with my dad and catch croaker and sand trout, and they're fun. And, you know, you catch them on the surf when you don't have a boat and all that. But what's the deal with all the sand trout under these birds? And are there trout to be had when you get into some birds that have sand trout on them?
And it's really gotten us to thinking. Nick and I were talking about this the other day. And historically in East Matagorda Bay, it is no issue to go out and just catch 7 out of 10 groups of birds is just speck after speck after speck after speck. And ever since October, when the birds really started working, it's primarily sand trout. And it has us wondering if we aren't going back to the freeze effects, to where there's just not as many specks out there with them as there are sand trout. Cause I mean, you can go, Nick and I went out the other evening. We went up in about 1.5 feet of water under birds, all sand trout. We went to 3 foot, mm-hmm. all sand trout. Went to deep, all sand trout. It almost got to be a joke. Like, gee, I wonder what's under this next group of birds. Now you can catch some specks in with them, but you're going to catch the sand trout 10-1 in most of these groups. And it has to have something to do with the numbers of specks that are out there. Now the sky isn't falling. After the hurricane, things got a lot better, but all year I've been saying, I think that the bird season is going to tell the story of what is really going on out here. And it's a lot harder to go find specks than it was before. And if birds are working, there's no easier way to go out there and get an idea of how healthy your speck population is.
You know, Scott, that's where my mind went as well, where what Caleb was just saying. But this is one of your, you know, great areas of expertise. When, I guess, sand trout, it was February, I forget the date, but it was in February when we had the big freeze. Obviously lost a lot of trout. I don't really remember seeing a lot of sand trout. I'm sure there were that were frozen. Number one, why was that we didn't see a lot of sand trout? Were we just consumed with speckled trout because that's one of our target fish? And the second thing is, do sand trout, and I meant to look this up, but then I realized that you're on the podcast, and I might as well just ask you, do sand trout spawn more often? Have they had a chance to bring more into the group, so to speak?
I don't know on the spawning part of them, but I remember seeing a bunch of sand trout, and when those pictures were coming in of the rafts of fish up against the shorelines,
mm-hmm.
I would blow them up and try to pick through them and just see what was there. Saw a lot of sand trout.
Mm-hmm.
My guess on them being under the birds would be that they're always there. You know, they're probably always under the birds, but the trout are a lot more aggressive and feeding up higher in the water column. So they typically catch more trout mm-hmm. under the birds. Right now, maybe there's not as many trout, and the sand trout are being a little more aggressive, and they've got less competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all can have experienced this, where we're catching under birds a bunch of speckled trout, and then there's an errant or wayward sand trout that we catch, and we're like, oh, cool, a little sand trout, and throw it back. So maybe the exact opposite is true. What would be your opinion on what that means long term if they're running together, you know, for the health of the speckled trout and sand trout, et cetera?
I think we need to get this three trout thing going. I mean, I know there's a bunch of people going to roll their eyes because they're catching trout. And
yeah,
when the guys who are really good at it are catching trout, that doesn't affect me. It doesn't raise my eyebrows at all. It's the fact that people who are the average fishermen, average or below fishermen, mm-hmm. that normally can catch some trout under birds or whatever, in the fall. I mean, everybody's a hero in the fall.
Yeah.
And from what I'm hearing, a lot of those guys aren't catching them. So that kind of leads me to believe that maybe the population isn't where it needs to be.
Right.
I would think that if it was, this is the time of year when, like I said, everybody's a hero. You know, your average fisherman can go out and catch some fish.
Right. Caleb, what about finding those trout? Are you, you know, and I know you target them a lot along with redfish. Are you sensing that they are the better, healthier trout are either shallower, or are you just hitting as many of those birds as you can until you find a group? Or what about the speckled trout?
And what I've been doing mostly to find some specks, and to be fair, we're catch and release, and a sand trout hits your lure so hard and fights so hard, we really couldn't care less as long as they've got some kind of size to them.
Yeah.
But whenever I have been seeing the specks showing up, is we're kind of fishing the trailing end of whatever school of fish we're on. So if the birds move to our right and we start casting the left and where they're coming from, we seem to be able to find some specks there. One of my old tricks is to throw something heavy past them and bring it down below it. And there's so many sand trout, they're picking it up off the bottom too. And you know, this isn't really my area of expertise, but I'm wondering if the trout are outnumbered that badly, the sand trout, what does that do with the trout that are hatching out? Because those sand trout, without a doubt, would eat the young ones.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was talking to Scott about. I'm wondering if that's going to be a possibility.
Yeah, no, there's no telling there. But like Scott said, you can go on Facebook and look at the posts of people catching specks. And yeah, they're there. Pat's been catching them real good, but Pat has also noticed that he's hitting 6 or 8 spots to find where some are at. And the absence that I've seen on social media are the done by nine post. I haven't seen much of that. I know a lot of people to go out and catch their trout for their customers. The guys that are keeping them, it's taking them a lot longer to get it done, it seems. You're just rolling the dice right now when you're trying to find them, when they're with those sand trout like that.
Share a quick story though, Scott, because I want to get your thoughts on if sand trout would be, predators of those smaller specks. So we were talking about what Caleb just said, behind them, under them, et cetera. And I mentioned, I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe 3, how I like to, that's when I throw the knock and tail, because you don't really need to work it, and you can put a heavier jig head on it and you can just kind of roll it under it. Just as Caleb said, you barely, barely off the ground and they'll hit it. So I was taking a video because I got into some birds and there were some sand trout and speckled trout mixed in. So I was by myself and I set the camera on my little holder on the helm there. I got to the front of the boat, turned on the video, hit the video, cast my knock and tail over the birds, way over the birds, dragged it in real slow. Boom, right away, man. Beautiful speckled trout, all things considered for a schoolie. And I held it in front of the camera and Caleb, you're going to just kill me for this, but I was like, okay, so that's exactly what I was talking about on the podcast. When you want to get under them, throw the knock and tail a little heavier, don't even need to work it. I went through the whole spiel, just to kind of give my guy, Mike a shout out. And then I went and turned off the camera. Well, when I turned it on, I turned it immediately off 2 seconds later. So you just see like the top of my head for 2 seconds and I'm sitting there talking to nobody on the boat. After it actually happened, I actually did it perfect. One cast. I'm like, dude, this is better than the shows you see on TV where they're fishing for 7 hours, catch one trout. I'm like, oh, okay, that's the way you do it. It was completely humiliating, but I looked around and there was nobody to see it. But now I'm telling everybody that I had a great video, except I didn't video it.
Well, coming from a content creator that's been doing this going on 2 years now, I'm going to do my best James Franco impersonation and say, first time.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't tell you how much epic stuff I've missed because I clicked the button wrong or whatever. So
oh, no. Nailed it. Yep. Perfect.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you try to watch it back right there? Or did you wait till you get home and you're all excited to have it?
It was like 3 hours later.
I was
back at the trailer and I'm like, I got to see this badass video. I see my hat with my Andy hat for 2 seconds. And I'm like, well, I guess I hit that button twice. But what we should mention with Knock a Tail, that Bite Me 20 thing is always going on for our listeners. Just go to mycoastoutdoors.com, 20% off on your Knock a Tail. Obviously, holidays coming along, so get your spouse because we have men and women fishing. Oh, I saw Lizette at your party. I haven't met her. She's one of the influencers you were talking about.
Yes, Lisette. Lisette is very influential. No doubt. Yeah, no. Yeah. Lisette was there. There was a wad of them, but it meant a lot. From a lot of them drove a long ways to be here. It was pretty neat.
Good deal. So anyway, Bite Me 20, mycoast.doors.com. But Scott, back to the topic. And I know you're probably going to make fun of me, but that on my video, I'll show you. I should show you guys the video. I'll put it on the Bite Me group page. It was awesome. I just nailed it. So sand trout as predators.
Yeah, I mean they're hitting lures.
Yeah. Oh, predators of the speckled trout, the smaller speckled trout.
Like anything that's hitting lures is going to eat other fish.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
I would
venture to say that if we got a whole bunch of sand trout hanging out, that they're going to raise hell with those baby trout when they're coming out.
Right.
That's just a guess. I mean, none of us are biologists, but we do spend a hell of a lot of time on the water and spend a whole lot of time thinking about this kind of stuff.
And we talk to them. I know you do more than I do. I mean,
it only makes sense that they're predators and that they would take a toll on anything that's out there in abundance.
Yeah, no doubt. So that was the same day. I ended up catching some trout. I just didn't have any on video, but That was the same day.
I had my hat on video.
That was the same day that, you know, I ended up catching a few, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna hit the back lake before I go in, see if I can catch a nice couple little slot reds. And I knew Caleb was, because he had sent me some pictures of him and his customers just nailing some reds. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go back there, I'm gonna catch them. And lo and behold, it was just another bad moment for yours truly. I went into the back lake, barreled in there, worked all the shorelines. The water was nasty, which I don't understand. Caleb and Scott, you're both gonna have to explain this to me, because as much fishing as I know, I don't understand this. When they're on the same general vicinity, two back lakes, I picked one that was muddy and dirty and didn't, there was a little bit of bait, but didn't even have one bite. I'm looking at pictures of Caleb, and I'm pretty sure I knew which back lake you were in, which was the next one over, or thereabouts, and you're just nailing them. Why did you pick the right one and I picked the wrong one, Caleb?
You potlicked incorrectly.
That's the story of my life.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, during the year, you have different tidal things, different winds, different stuff to do different things to it. And, you know, whether it's a tournament or whatever, I'm going to drive and drive and drive until I find water that looks good and is clean. And you know, that's what I had done that day. I'd ran through the lake you're talking about, and it was a little bit turned over. And don't get me wrong, I'll fish muddy water when I have to. But you know, I just kept going and found some cleaner stuff. And right now, this time of year, when I'm finding cleaner water, then that's where I'm finding the redfish at. Even in some of the lakes where they're muddy on one side and clean on the other side, the fish seem to be really concentrated in that cleaner stuff. And, you know, Scott may argue with me here, and it's not going to be an argument because I'm just taking a guess at what I see, is that in that cleaner water right now, they're grouped up and they're rooting around looking for shrimp to be popping around. And it's probably a lot easier for them to find them and eat them in that case versus just, you know, feeling them popping in the dirty water and trying to find them. But right now, clean water.
Yeah, makes sense.
A lot of times, just real quick to follow up on Caleb, and I'll get your thoughts here, Scott, but I broke my own rule too. A lot of times I'll just tell myself it's just gas. You know, go into a back lake, and if you don't like what you see, just turn around, go to the next one, go across the way or whatever. And I broke my own rule. I just hang there because it was almost time for me to come in, and I just didn't get anything. But what are you looking at when you're picking a back lake, Scott?
Yeah, I'm all into sight casting, so I got to find some cleaner water. Mm-hmm. If I run into the dirty water, yeah, I used to fish it in the tournaments all the time. We've talked about it a lot here. I could find some big fish in that dirtier water by throwing popping corks and gulp and doing it that way. But my preferred way and way my customers are looking to do it is sight casting. So I'm always going to go look for some cleaner water. Mm-hmm. If you can't find it, then you're down to looking for swirls, a back out, a fin, you know, one shrimp jumping. It gets a lot more technical if you can't actually see the fish.
Right, right. Well, this week's going to be better. I can just feel it in my bones. Of course, I've said that before 150 times. Hey, I want to get into the single hook drops question that we got on Corkies and topwaters. But real quick, we talked last week about lithium batteries, kind of a wave of the future, so to speak. They're much lighter. They run at 100%, as Scott was saying. And one of the things that you pointed out, Scott, was they're awesome. They can run and run and run and run. But then when they're out and they're done, that's it. They're done. So I wanted to ask our guy JT over at the Boatyard about that, you know, what some of the advances, so to speak, in the lithium batteries and some of the brands that might be, you know, better to use for people. I know you have some in your garage. I think Caleb has messed around with lithium batteries a little bit, but this is what JT had to say. So last week we were talking about the Dakota lithium batteries, and the Boatyard has those available, and we were breaking down the pros and cons. A lot of good feedback on that. Some people had no really idea on what they were and how they worked and were they right for your boat, et cetera. So I thought I'd go right to the source, man, our guy JT over at the Boatyard in beautiful Kema. And JT, first of all, hope you guys had a great long holiday weekend. I know you guys are always working, but hopefully you broke away for a couple of days anyway. But I thought I'd go right to the source. I mentioned the Dakota lithium battery. I know you guys have the Abyss lithium battery as well. before we get into the pros and cons of those two, what are the pros and cons? A lot of people have interest in the lithium battery because of much less weight. What are some of the other things that they need to know?
Yeah, I mean, they're way, way lighter in the boat. Another thing is the warranty. That's the big pro with them. Some have 10, 11 year warranty. And the warranty is kind of like they all break down a different way depending on which company you go with. But let's say you have 10 year warranty on the battery. Some companies will say first 3 to 5 years, they'll replace the battery outright. So we all know the big con with lithium batteries is they're way more expensive. But I mean, with a regular Interstate or Continental, you have a 1 year warranty. If you've got the first 3 to 5 years and that's a brand new battery, if it goes bad, I mean, that's kind of your money right there.
Yeah.
Instead of buying 3 batteries, you only have one. That already makes up for part of the cost. And the remaining 5 years or so, they'll sell you a battery brand new at maybe a third of the price or half the price. So the biggest con with lithium batteries is the price, obviously, the big price tag, but they've made up with it hugely in their warranty.
So what about the progression of the, you know, the product? You know, I'm sure there were always some glitches and some things to iron out early on in the development of the lithium batteries. Where do we stand right there in terms of how would you rate it, you know, sitting right next to three, you know, regular batteries?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely got it down. A lot of issues have been solved, batteries heating up. You know, I don't know if you've seen these little Segway things that these kids are riding on, the lithium batteries catch fire on an airplane. Now you
That's what they were, right?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, all that stuff, these marine batteries, the bigger series ones, it's pretty much all figured out. And some of them, you know, depending on the brand, I know the brand Abyss, they offer a Bluetooth app where you can actually monitor the battery. That kind of gives, you know, a lot of people's gripe on the lithiums is when they go, they go. If they're out of charge, you know, you get that full power the whole time. But when they're out, they're out. If you can monitor it on an app, you know exactly how much time you got. You know, it's kind of like clicking that button on your trolling motor to see how much juice you have left. Same thing. You can see it right on your phone as you're out on the water.
Yeah, that's what one of the things Scott was talking about. I know he's been sold on them. He's got some in his shop ready to go. Is this where we're all going to be eventually, just because, you know, some of the, like I said, the weight, you know, the fact that you can work at 100%, is this where you see the industry going?
A little bit. Definitely, like, weight is a big thing. Also, you know, if you guys are running bigger boats that, you know, some of your listeners might guide off, or they just run bigger boats in general, if you're using a 36-volt trolling motor, that's 3 big batteries you got to put somewhere. And replacing that with one just in the value of storage is, you know, a big difference. But as far as, like, overall trend, it's mostly up to preference.
Yeah.
I would recommend them if, you know, if you can spend that money, the warranty, like I said, is worth it, and saving the space and the weight is worth it. But, you know, you got to do what you can afford. But I
think what fits you,
of course.
Yeah. All right. How about that? You're here at the Bite Me podcast, went right to the source. That's the Boatyard down in Kema. Just real quick, what's going on right now with the Boatyard? I'm guessing you're starting to get, you talked about motors coming in. You talked about, you know, getting some more product. I know Chet over at Freedom Boats is busting his tail, just, you know, making those boats handmade, but he's churning them out with more people doing it. What do you guys have?
Yeah, I mean, I got tons of motors for Freedoms right now, 60s, 115s. I mean, if you prefer Yamaha, if you prefer Suzuki, Tohatsu, I've got everything ready to roll. And Chet's rolling over there down in Puerto Vaca, too. So it's looking good. I mean, we had that John boat segment a while back. Anyone just kind of looking to get out on the water for cheap, I've got a bunch of portable motors too.
All right. Good deal. That's JT Koshy over at the Boatyard. I'm going to check in with you again next week, 'cause I got another question that came up over the course of this conversation, but let's get to the podcast. Let's get back to the podcast right now. All right. So Caleb, what is your thoughts on lithium batteries and the future of them?
I think the main ups on a lithium would be that it's lighter, so my boat floats shallower and my boat runs faster. The drawbacks on them, they can be quite severe, really, because it'll show 100% charge until it goes straight to zero. And, you know, Daniel has all lithiums on his boat, so I've messed with them quite a bit, and they do really well. They do good. I'm probably going to put lithiums on my next boat, but you know, the advances are being made. They're getting better and better and better.
Right. Like the one he talked about there, where you have an app on your phone that you can connect to the battery and it'll say 10 more minutes. That to me is pretty awesome.
Yeah. You can pair that PowerPole charge system with them and you can do it. Your phone will tell you everything you want to know about them. It's really easy to transfer power between them. If you have that system, you can have a cranking battery and a trolling motor battery. And if you need more trolling motor for the day, it will send power from the cranking battery to it. And if your cranking battery's down, it'll work the other way around. So they do some really neat things, and the advances they're making, it's neat. There's really no other way to put it.
And you know, Scott, one thing you said, you got some in your shop waiting to be on your new boat. What's the status of that, man? New boat.
Working on it.
Because I'd like to play around with them myself.
Yeah, I got to get things rolling here, you know. And it's carving season will be here before I know it, and that's why I got to get that new boat lined up and ready to go for tarpon.
Yeah.
Hopefully, the shoulder will be ready for tarpon.
By the way, your guy Gwen that got that amazing buck, he messaged me as well and said, you know, he sent me a picture. He said, feel free to post it because we talked. He listened to, he's a big podcast listener. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
He says he listens all the time. Listens. And so I'll post that here as well on the group page. But all right, boys. So, you know, Caleb throws corkies. I throw corkies. And we had a question from a listener about the single hook drops. Are they as effective on corkies? You know, we've all, you know, well, some of us more than others. I'm not real good at it. You know, change the hooks on our topwaters to single drops for safety and other reasons. And we all seem to agree that they, you know, they work very, very similar, if not as well, perfectly as well. What about corkies? Caleb, I'm going to start with you because you throw them a lot. Pat throws them a lot. How do you feel on that?
I don't change them out often on mine. I don't change them out on my topwaters either, though. I don't have much grass over here. I was fishing some grass the other day, and we were talking back and forth about, you know, that the single hooks might be better because you could work your lure about 10 yards max, and then you were grassed up and had to bring it back in. I would have to get pretty technical with weighing the single hooks versus the treble hooks.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, if you're somewhere like Baffin where the salinity level is higher and you're having problems with your corky not getting down, then using a heavier single hook may be the way to go. It's something I really haven't messed with, but I'd be interested in hearing some feedback from people that have.
Now, Scott, I know you don't throw corkies a lot with the fishing that you're doing, but you do topwaters. How has your reaction been, the action, I should say, on your baits when you're throwing topwaters with a single drop?
I don't really notice much difference at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference in the hooks would be just so minute. I don't know that it would make that big of a difference. Yeah. I think, like you said, salinity level would make a bigger difference, in your sink rate than changing a hook.
Right.
You could go in there and start weighing the hooks and try to get real technical with it. And, that way you could match it up exactly. Maybe just go with a little, you know me, I fly by the seat of my pants. I'm looking at a treble hook of one size. I go one size bigger, you know, one aught bigger than the treble hook if I was going to a single, and kind of call that good.
Yeah. I change mine. I leave mine with the treble hooks until they get rusty, and then I put a single drop on it just because I'm lazy, I guess. I just feel like I shouldn't waste that good hook there, you know, but I'll do that. I will say this, your friend and mine, Caleb, Mike over at Anglers Anonymous, texted me just today, and it is corky season. Well, it's always corky season more than others, sometimes more than others, but he actually texted me and said that they have the Paul Brown, they have the Coastal Marsh, and they have the Texas Custom Lures, Custom Corkies, all stocked up. And I know you've been talking to him as well.
Yeah, they have almost an entire aisle of corkies. I've never been in there when they said, we don't have that one in. Yeah. I was over there yesterday. They're closed on Mondays, which is the day that I usually go. That's when he opens it up for like the really cool people or the people that I mostly forget it's Monday is why I go over there then. But fortunately, he's usually there doing his books. I was in his back room where he does his books at, and he has a pile of Sims waders that every size, every model. He did say that people are buying them up pretty quick, but right now his size, he has sizes and everything. He has the boots, all the wading stuff. I have the new Sims Free Salts, and those things are, they're cut for your waders. So I wear a size 10 shoe. I can wear a size 10. My waders are super comfortable. And then the thing that's kind of rare for them is the real repairs and cleanings are, they're a week or less, you know, providing you don't bring in something crazy that he has to try to get some wild part for. It's a week or less wait on that.
A week or less from real repair right now?
A week or less. Typically, it's like 4 weeks. Yeah. And right now they're at a week or less. They've got caught up, and they do phenomenal work. They take care of all of my stuff, and God bless them for it. Because whenever I take it to them, it needs some help.
Yeah, I'm guessing it would be. I said Corky season. I know you and I like to throw them year round, but let's just be honest. I mean, this is a time of year when a lot of guys are jumping out of the boat, and they want to throw. It's easier to throw a Corky. I very, very, very rarely throw a Corky from the boat. There will be occasions when I do, but this is the time when if you do need them, if you do need the, you know, we talked about them in depth last week, so we're not going to reiterate that, but, it's a good time to get out of the boat and start throwing those suckers, right?
Oh, no doubt. Does that, you know, I throw a Corky when I'm waiting, not only because it's effective, but because I get bored throwing everything else. I like messing with that Corky and see what I can make it do. So now is the time.
Yeah. All right. So Scott, this one is, these next two questions, but this one for sure is, for you. I hadn't really thought of this. You know, once you get good at kayaking or good enough, you know, you have the confidence and you have the system down, but that water does get pretty cold. I mean, not enough to where it'll kill you. You can get out and get back on your boat, but it's incredibly uncomfortable. And most people don't, I know you have done this, but most people don't pack an extra set of clothes, on a kayak. Is there, the question was about cold water kayaking. This guy's been getting into it for about a year now. And he said that, you know, he just loves doing it. He's a little apprehensive. Not this week, of course, because we talk about how the weather is going to be warmer. But the water's still going to be pretty cool. But he talks about how he gets pretty apprehensive when the water is cold and the weather is cold about kayaking. And I frankly, I'm just going to toss it to you. I didn't have an answer for him if you're apprehensive about the conditions in a kayak.
Well, first off, I'm happy that he's apprehensive because that means he's paying attention.
That's
the guys
true.
That I worry about are the ones that aren't worried about it. You know? Yeah. Like think nothing of, you know, hey, it's just kayaking, it's just fishing, and head on out no matter what the weather is.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take a few more precautions. I would wear, you hear it all the time, don't wear waders in a kayak, they'll fill up and they'll drown you. It's not really, Everett Johnson did a deal on it several years ago where he wore waders and jumped in a swimming pool and just to see what would happen. If you wear a wader belt, take a belt, cinch it up around your chest, up around the top part of the waders, very little water gets in and you will actually float with your feet up. You know, your whole body will float up.
Mm-hmm.
You're real buoyant. It also keeps the cold water from going in there should you take that unexpected little swim.
Mm-hmm.
The difference nowadays though is most of the kayaks are so dead-gum stable. I mean, they've gotten wider and wider over the years, which means they're slower for paddling. So those of us who really like to paddle,
yeah,
the newer kayaks aren't that great, but they are a lot more stable. And really, you gotta just about have to try to fall out of a kayak these days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, getting into some rougher water, I could see that being a problem. Dean used to take his old waders, any of them that were, you know, getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
And he had his mother-in-law turn them into pants. And he had it, we called them his rubber pants.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd put a belt on, you know, and wear them, they were like high-rise pants.
Yeah.
And I've got some waders that are convertibles that I can fold down like that. So dressing for it is important. Don't wear any cotton. You know, wear stuff that will dry quickly. I always had a dry bag with another set of clothes. And I brought something that would start a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Any of these little islands that you end up on, They've all got driftwood. They've all got something that'll burn, an engine cowling maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever you can find, you can set it on fire. I used to carry those little torches, mm-hmm. you know, little,
like a cigar torch,
soldering torch.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cigar torch. Of course you went cigar, but, yeah, they're,
you know, I did.
They're heat shrink, you know.
Yeah.
And for things like that, those will start something that's wet. You can hold it on there, and anything that's damp, you can dry it out enough to get it started and catch a fire. Bring something that that reflects. Bring your whistle. Bring your, you know, make sure you have all your safety gear. It's always important, but it's even more important in the wintertime. You have less margin for error.
And all that said, Scott, don't let it deter you. Kayaks right now are so advanced, as you mentioned, but wintertime fishing, you can get into some beautiful spots that, that even, you know, the some of the skinny water boats can't get into.
Oh yeah, the super low tides that we always talk about that come, you know, January and February.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go out there and I would pull my kayak across mud to go to some back lakes that I knew were still holding water.
Mm-hmm.
And I would find trapped redfish back there in some of those deeper cuts. The other thing is scouting, you know, being able to go back into places where you just kind of scoot the kayak across mud and super shallow water. Then you can get way back into those lakes and see what those lakes look like without water in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
File that away in your memory. Take some pictures.
Yeah. You know, I've done that. We talked about that recently.
Yeah. When the water comes back up, now you have a roadmap.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, with kayaks, we got to mention, you know, our event, December 11th, at the Katy location of Fishing Tackle Unlimited. I know you're going to be there. I'm going to be there. A lot of, guides are going to be there. We'll try to coax Caleb to come out there and, you know, hang out with us that day if he doesn't have a trip. But that's going to be December 11th at the Katy location. Just fun. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, for fly fishing, which we're going to get into here in just a second. Great, great teachers, great products, but kayaks too, man. I mean, you know, right now Fishing Tackle Unlimited can take care of you. I know Camille is real big into Jackson, but everything you could get, you could, all these questions you can ask the actual experts of the dealers.
Yeah, there will probably be some pro staffers there, mm-hmm. you know, from the different kayak companies, along with everybody else. Yeah, you can. Any questions you got about fishing, kayaking, fly fishing, anything along those lines, somebody there is going to be able to answer your question.
Yeah, no question. And when I got this question, I actually thought of Caleb first, not you, Scott. It's about fly fishing. And we've been on you about, I haven't even attempted. I have that little confidence in fly fishing. I haven't even attempted to go fly fishing. But Caleb has said, we got to go. Man, we got to go. We got to get your shoulder 100%. And just the videos alone, presuming that they're working when I take them, I'll let Caleb do the videoing maybe. We got to get on that boat with you and go fly fishing, man.
I'm going to bring a helmet, and a flak jacket,
glasses, those work glasses.
Yeah, the big goggles. Safe, big goggles, yeah. mainly going to cover my ears. So that, you know, I don't get a hook in the back of an ear. Yeah, I've seen those, Caleb cast.
All those fish flying on the boat will be dangerous. I mean,
I'm telling you.
You need to get padded up for this one. We'll do it at the same time.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, I know he's got a two-man boat, but who cares?
Yeah, I'll do it left-handed. You do it right-handed.
Yeah, I'll be so tangled up, it won't bother me any.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll go to the expo and learn a couple things and surprise you. Start throwing flies. But Caleb, you've thrown some. It was just not a good experience.
Well, because I was with Scott. I mean, I've had great experiences with other people. Scott just flat makes it miserable on me. I mean, there's nothing else to be said about it. You know, he sits there and drinks his beer and laughs at me and says, "You suck." And I said, "Well, what should I do?" He said, "Put the fly rod down." I mean, what kind of coaching is that?
All right. So the question
is, there's some things that just can't be fixed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and I've got video proof. It can't be fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to at least try just for the story, if nothing else. But here's the question. Scott, obviously we're going to you on this first. I'm getting into fly fishing, wondering what is the reel and rod I need to get for catching reds and trout, and any info you have on actual flies. I went to the shop today and they had a ton of selection and I was lost. Thanks for your info. Love the podcast. Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, I would go into the aisle and I'd be just shrugging my shoulders. I have no idea what I'm looking for. I know you've mentioned some kind of inside fly fishing stuff for those that do fly fish, you know, like what rod length and what you throw here and offshore for tarpon. But what about like just us, you know, us newbies, you know, what are you telling them?
Trout and redfish typically is a 7-weight, 8-weight, or 9-weight. The majority of people go with an 8-weight. It's, you know, kind of right in the wheelhouse.
Explain 7-8 and 8-weight.
Okay. In fly fishing, the weight refers to the first section of the line. In fly fishing, you're not throwing a lure. You're throwing the line. The lure just happens to be attached as a fly. The fly has no weight for the most part. Some of them are slightly weighted just to make them sink a little bit faster. But the rods are designed to carry that amount of weight. They go by grains. I don't have a chart in front of me, but let's say 300 to 400 grain is an 8-weight. Mm-hmm. So that means that fly line weighs between 300 and 400 grains in that first 30 feet. Mm-hmm. That's what you're carrying. That's what the rod is designed to be able to throw. So you have to match your line with your rod and all of that. You don't want to go out there with like a 4-weight. Because that's ultralight. It's more trout, you know, freshwater trout fishing.
Right.
It can be done. You know, I've done it. I mean, I've caught some really big fish on little bitty rods. But the standard is the 8-weight, 7-weight. It also has to do with wind. The heavier rod, you know, that 7-8-weight, I can go out there with a 5 or 6-weight and cast just fine as long as the wind's not blowing. Mm-hmm. You start getting a little more wind, which on the coast, we're going to have wind most of the time. The heavier rod fights that a little bit better. You get into tarpon, then you start bumping up by the size of the fish. It'll handle more. Yeah. So a 7-8-weight is like a medium light rod.
Okay. You know,
medium to medium light rod in casting terms. So it'll handle most anything that you got out there in the bay. If you happen to run into a bull redfish, you can handle it on an 8-weight. It's just not quite as easy. As far as rods, there's so many different rods out there and they're different actions. If you're starting out, I always suggest go get some lessons first before you go out and buy anything. Go to somebody that's reputable. Mike Barbie is over there at the Katy store. Kerry Marcus, he's down at the Gulf Freeway store at Fish and Tackle Unlimited. They're both excellent teachers. They'll take you out in the parking lot. You can cast one of the store rods and they can kind of judge on based on your cast, how strong your cast is, how, you know, what style of caster you are. You're a little quicker, a little slower, mm-hmm. and they can kind of match a rod to you, the action of the rod. You can get into fly rods anywhere from the mid 200s on up to $1,000 just for a rod. I don't suggest getting a Ferrari to learn to drive. It's not necessary. All the TFO rods, they've got some great ones. As far as a reel goes, you can get into really, really cheap reels that are cast, you know, aluminum. They'll hold up pretty well, but go ahead and spend some money on a reel when you do decide to get into it and you get a machine, CNC machined fly reel with a decent drag on it.
Mm-hmm.
The drag's not necessary for our typical trout and reds. They're not really going to test your reel all that much. But say you jump into a jack,
right?
You bump into a bull red, it's nice to have it. It's good insurance. There'll be the CNC machine reels will also be anodized. The reels, most of them have sealed drags. There's virtually no maintenance to them. You rinse them off, you're done.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of moving parts.
One of the great No, there's not a lot of moving parts. And then the drag is the only thing, and it's sealed. They don't want you messing with the drag on most of these newer reels. So sticking with that, you know, stick with 7-8 weight. And then on flies, anything that looks like a shrimp, looks kind of buggy, you know, shrimp, crab. There's times when bait fish flies tend to work a little bit better. But most of the time, anything that's brown and fuzzy, man.
Yeah.
It sounds funny, but people get all hung up on trying to make a fly look exactly like a shrimp. It just needs to look somewhat like it and have the right motion, the right movement to it. Those guys can help you out at the fly shops as well. They're all real good. Fly fishing used to have a connotation of being a little uppity, you know,
aloof.
You'd walk into a fly shop if you didn't know what you were doing, you know, you'd get laughed at and, you know, get sent out. But it's a lot more inclusive these days. There's a whole lot more people getting into it. I'm seeing younger and younger guys getting into it. And I think as we see limits dropping the way they have, I think you're going to see even more people getting into fly fishing.
Yeah.
I get this question that you just asked probably 2 to 3 times a week on emails and messages on Facebook. It's a constant question.
So if I become a fly fisherman, do I have to get one of those wicker basket fish holder things that they use and put the flies on a little floppy hat? I have the floppy hat. Caleb, are you in with me? Let's show up on Caleb's on Scott's boat with the wicker basket.
Yes, y'all please do that. Please.
only if you can get the little tiny wood net too. I want that tiny.
Yeah, the
net.
Wood. I have one of those. I use it mostly as decoration, but.
Yeah, you got to have a tiny net. That's very important.
The wood net, the wicker basket, tackle box, and the flies on my floppy
we're gonna
hat.
We're going to need a vest of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Oh, hip waders. We need hip waders.
That'll get some water on your feet.
You reckon Anglers Anonymous or FDU some wading boots with fuzzy stuff on the bottom of them? And we'll just do it all.
We'll see if they have those wicker baskets. I've always wanted one of those.
Club Limited actually does.
I thought it was for sandwiches. I thought it was for a picnic basket on your hip.
Yeah, hey, boo-boo.
All right, so, now we got to. Now we've got to do that.
I'll invest in this.
For sure. All right, so this one is for you, Caleb, because this is another question that I think a lot of us just kind of fall into our confidence reels, our confidence rods, our confidence baits. We talk about those. Confidence line. I am just tried and true. I buy the same line all the time. And it tied in with this question because literally 10 minutes later, I got a Instagram message from a listener saying, okay, so I forget what brand it was. Anyway, he uses this brand braided line, 20-pound test on everything. And the question was, what do you guys use in different situations, different times of year, different fish that you're targeting? And I'm like, I kind of use the same line on everything. And maybe I'm just rudimentary here because I just love that line. But I mean, do you have any thoughts on that, Kev? Do you ever change I use 25. And if they don't have it in stock, this is just a total unpaid endorsement. I go to Cast King. They have the best prices on Cast King for moss green 25-pound braided line. And if they don't have it, I'll buy the 30. And I buy the big spools, and I just use that on everything. Do you do anything different?
I use all of my trout stuff has 30 on it. The reason I use 30 is it's easier to pull a backlash out of it. And
well,
whenever
you got customers.
Right, but it's easier to dig a backlash out, whether they got invited to use the reel or not. I do need that. And then it doesn't dig. If I'm fighting something really heavy or I set the hook on a piece of shell or something, it doesn't dig and it's easier to use versus the 20. And you're talking about very, very minimal difference in size. My redfish rods, they're almost all of them have 50 on it. I have a couple of rods that have 60 or 80 on it. The 60 and 80, that's stuff that we don't talk about much here as far as, you know, fish that I fish for and ways that I fish for them. So it's kind of a moot point, but I'm going to be throwing 30 or 50, depending on what I'm doing. Now, if I wasn't tournament fishing and really cared about it, then I would just throw 30 across the board to be dead honest with you.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better because I was sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking, well, you're in a tournament you can't afford to just have fun and work the fish and throw a lighter line like right. I do. You know, if I lose a redfish, oh, well, you know, I'm disappointed, but I'm not losing any money.
And to be honest, the 30-pound line, I could probably skip him across the water and boat flip him just like I do with the 50, but I don't have any thoughts in the back of my head with that 50.
Yeah. So, Scott, I'm guessing since you guide as well, you maybe lean toward heavier, but I'm 25 or 30, moss green, braid on everything. What are your thoughts?
A lot of my customers, my customer rods, I have spinning rods, and I'll generally go a little lighter on that. I'll go with 20. Mm-hmm. But as far as my casting rods, my personal stuff is 30. And like Caleb, when I used to fish all the redfish stuff, we threw 65 pound. That was common. You're not going to run out of line. You know, mm-hmm. you got plenty of line on your reel, and we just cranked the drag down. Hell, we bent hooks. You know, we'd straighten out hooks before we'd break a line. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can't tell you how many times I threw across the salt grass into a little pond because we saw a redfish cruising and just
dragging him across,
dragging right back across there, kicking and screaming, man. Relocate that redfish to the boat.
And you know, I'm old school with the color because I see these neon colors and these bright other colors. And I guess I'm just like, it's ingrained in me from childhood, Caleb, you know, keep it as clear and invisible as possible. The water we fish in is generally green to gin green, you know, gin clear. I'm just, the color to me has to be green, but I know there are people who are probably just yelling at their podcast, you know, or at their device right now saying, no, you got to use pink or you got to use yellow or whatever. Color matter at all?
I'm not overly educated in the subject, but I think the colors are kind of gimmicky and they're to catch you at the store. I buy dark green all the time, and as I use it, it turns into light green, and then some of my stuff will be almost white. I don't ever change line unless I'm just out of line. But yeah, I'm with the dark green. It is. Whenever the pink stuff came out, there was something about fish can't see it or something, but they'll sure see a pink lure pretty quick.
That's true. What do you think, Scott?
The pink line came out because of Babes on the Bay. And I know the guy who made the pink line, that's what they made it for, was to give away to that. And then all these people started using it, and they fell in love with the line. They thought it was because that pink line was special. Mm-hmm. So they sold a lot of it that way. But, yeah, I'm not big on color online. It's all going to fade eventually. And, hell, there's a lot of mine that are more white than they are green.
That's how I know when to change it. Caleb, I mean, it's like, wow, this is really, really white, and it's not supposed to be. That's how I know when to change it.
So I'm going to start trying a new different line here that I'm going to be testing out. And the one thing I was told is that it has some kind of coating on it. It takes longer to make it bad, and bad being like floppy and white and flat. And I cannot wait for my line to get floppy and white and flat.
Yeah,
that's where I like it to be at.
Yeah, it's like those lures that have a million bite marks on them, and you don't even want to change it, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, baby, I've caught 17 trout on this thing or whatever. And you know, that just makes you feel like a man.
The worst is brand new braid is the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. brand new straight off the spool braid, and it drives you nuts. Yeah, I don't feel good with it until it's been on there and I've used it for a week or two.
I think that's where a lot of the people that are still using the mono, they hang up, is they're not used to the braid, so they go get their reel spooled in it, and it kicks their butt. But they just don't get past the part where it's difficult. I'm going to bird nest the heck out of it 4 or 5 times when it's brand new every time.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'll rear back and launch. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen me throw a topwater, but there's no quarter given. And, yeah. I catch it just wrong, and it'll blow up on me a couple of times. That's why I throw the 30. That's how I know how good the backlash has come out.
Yeah, because we've all had that practice.
And so, honestly, in the tournaments, when we were throwing the 65, a big part of it was backlash. You know, it was you could get a backlash out of 65 in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were trying to throw 20, that reel, you might as well throw it on the bottom of the deck and pick up another rod. And time is money when you're fishing a tournament.
Yeah, that's like that time I backlashed with you guys. And Scott's like, oh, don't worry, I can get it out. Well, we can all get it out if it's not buried. But when it gets buried under like 9 rows of line, Yeah, I just gave my reel to Scott. I said, sure, take this one out. It ain't going to happen.
I don't know how many backlashes I've dug out, handed it back to the customer and said, this is what I really do for a living.
When I see that line buried under like 17 rows of other, I'm like, oh, crap. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a job. That's why I keep so many.
I had two guys show up for a trip one day, and they had brand new rods and reels.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new bait casters spooled up with brand new braid. Neither one of them had ever thrown a bait caster before.
Oh,
they showed
my
up
Lord.
Guided fishing trip, sight casting that way. And I was just doing nothing but picking out backlash. And these were cutout backlashes. These were not, just your typical pull it out and it's good. You know, we were cutting line out of there. Finally, they got to the point they didn't have enough line on to even cast, so I just handed them spinning reels. Everything was fine. They were used to spinning reels.
Yeah.
I don't know why they decided they had to have bait casters that day, but I had wadded up line in all my pockets. And I came home, and Camille said, well, how'd it go today? And I didn't say anything. I just reached in one of my pockets and put out a big old bird's nest on the counter.
That's
how
it went. Oh.
And I picked out another one, reached into another pocket and another pocket, and I just started laying them out. I probably had 500 yards of line sitting on the counter, and she just shook her head and said, okay, I don't need to know anymore.
Was that Ed and Mark?
No.
those Florida guys showed up and showed up all the spinners. I said, man, I didn't know that y'all brought your wives and kids with you.
That's the funniest thing, how Florida and Texas with the casting and the bait casting and the spinning reels just goes back and forth. I lied earlier. That's the other way I know when to change my line. Is when I cast and it goes dunk and it hits the end of the line and on the knot on the spool, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I've cut enough line off of this one. It only goes half as far as I normally throw it. Just real quick, a couple of other things for our Bite Me listeners. I always like to remind you of this because it's a great deal you really don't get anywhere else. And we were talking about wading and corkies. And I should have mentioned it then because it ties right in. And that's our guy Tim and Jason over at CoastalFishingGear.com with the Bite Me special. And 20% off, Bite Me 20. That code works, man. Bite Me 20, the number's 20. An extra 20% off of the entire package. If you're just getting into it right now, winter fishing, you can get those Sims waders that Caleb was talking about that Mike has just stacked up there. Get your wade right belt at coastalfishinggear.com. Get 20% off and you'll be doing it a lot quicker. Same thing with Deadly Dudley. You know, one of those baits that I like to show off and makes me feel like a man when I catch 17 trout on one lure. You can get those. In fact, right now, this week, he was telling me that the Cyber Monday deals, which is actually 30% off, aside from the Bite Me 20 discount, but you can get the Cyber Monday all this week, all the way through Saturday. So you can go to deadlydudley.com and get those things taken care of. All right. What would Scott do? What would Caleb do? Don't ask what would John do, because I struck out twice last week trying to find a back lake and other things. But what would Scott do? We're warm. We got into the podcast with the Indian summer. But what would you do given the wind conditions, the temperatures? And I don't think the tides are going to be high. I think this weekend, in at least in the Texas Gulf Coast, they're not going to be real active tides either.
No, I mean, all the tides are showing. I checked all up and down the coast, and it's anywhere from 6 inches to a foot, maybe a little bit more than that above what the predicted tides are. So I think it's just going to stay that way. We've got light southeast winds. Going to be foggy in the mornings. It has been here the last two mornings. I mean, you couldn't see out. I couldn't see my deer feeder in the backyard. I mean, it was pretty foggy. Take it easy in the mornings getting out there. maybe launch a little bit later. That mm-hmm. would be my plan. And, I've always had really good luck throwing topwaters in fog. Those real heavy fog mornings, just chunk of topwater along, drop off somewhere and start
getting
awesome. Pick some good trout. Yeah, you can hear it really well. Pick off some good trout like that. And then as the sun gets up, then I'd probably transition over to sight casting for reds. They're going to be up shallow, prowling in the edges of the grass. Like I said, kind of a kickback to earlier in the fall.
You know? Yeah. I know today, Caleb, there was thick fog. I'm going to head out a little later Friday and probably Saturday as well. just because we got one big incoming tide on the mid coast here that's going to be coming in all day. But what would Caleb do?
I'm going to be right there with Scott. I'm looking at the wind tomorrow. I'm red fishing the rest of the week. We got the variable southeast, and I'm probably going to be out drifting. But what I've noticed this time of year is the forecast and what happens usually isn't the same. A lot of time it'll be really dead early in the morning, and the wind will start picking up mid-morning. So anytime I get those low winds, I'm going to be out on that bay looking for schools or something. Yeah. And then when it starts blowing, then I'll either be looking for birds or just drifting some good area. I don't think I'm going to be doing a whole lot of waiting coming up the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. All right. Well, man, you guys knocked it out of the park as usual. I hope everybody gets on the Bite Me group page. I'll post that picture. I'll do it to ASAP of the big buck. If you're a hunter as well as a fisherman, it's worth your while to look at that. I know you can go to scottnullphotography.com as well to get some Bite Me gear and represent. We've got so many listeners. It's great to interact with all you guys and girls, and it's a lot of fun. So Scott Null Photography for your Bite Me gear. Hit us up on Instagram at Lopez on Sports on Instagram, at Lopez on Sports on Twitter. But probably the best way is to just message us via Facebook. If we're not your friends, go to Instagram. And I don't know if you guys have any parting shots or anything, parting thoughts. Besides that, let's just go catch some fish. Scott, Caleb, you guys got anything?
I've got 3 days of deer hunting coming up. I got more customers coming in, so hopefully I'll have some more big deer pictures to put up there.
That one was incredible. I'll do that as soon as we sign off here. Caleb?
No, I'm just preparing for you to ask me how I fish under reindeer. I'm getting that lined up.
that's later in the month.
Okay.
We'll hit with the reindeer. And I'll tell you on Friday and Saturday where I'm not catching fish, so you'll know where not to go, Caleb.
Atta boy.
Nah, I'm good. I'm here for you, man. All right. So you guys have a great weekend. I'll be out on the water for at least 3 days. So come say hello. And until then, catch them up, and we'll talk to you next time on the Bite Me podcast.